Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
Billionaire liberal mega donor George Soros is handing control of his massive empire to his son Alex. Alex says he's more political than his father. He promises to expand his dad's progressive agenda. Former presidential speechwriter Mark Thiessen says Alex Soros's influence should not be taken lightly.
If you just invest a few million dollars in these races, you can elect one guy who will just enforce criminal justice reform for you by not prosecuting. And they've had a 90% success rate. And so if his son's going to double down on this, we got a lot of problems coming into America's cities.
Is he going to double down? Take a look at these pictures. Is he cozy with the White House? Take a look. 37-year-old Alex keeps a busy political calendar. He's reportedly visited the White House at least 14 times in just over a year. And he's often seen posting pictures of himself. He's active on social media with powerful Democratic politicians, including one from just last week, Vice President Kamala Harris. Fox Business's Kelly O'Grady has more now from Los Angeles. Kelly, good to see you.
Great to see you too, Harris. And yeah, that characterization of more political than his father, I mean, that's going to be a tall order to live up to, especially given his father's reputation. So in that first interview since taking reins of the $25 billion empire, he shared this with the Wall Street Journal. He said, "I'm more political. As much as I would love to get money out of politics, as long as the other side is doing it, we will have to do it too." So for context, Alex will chair the Open Society Foundation. It's a nonprofit that directs roughly $1.5 billion towards democratic causes and institutions. His father, George, of course, also known for backing DAs and law enforcement that push progressive issues like bail reform. Alex shared he plans to expand the family's giving to include a focus on gender equity, abortion, and voting rights. Those, of course, will all be key 2024 issues. Now, Alex, he's already a big political donor apart from his family, pouring $5.7 million since 2018 into democratic PACs and campaigns. And like you said, he's known to flaunt his liberal connections. You do a quick scan of social media, it shows countless pictures with world leaders, Democratic mainstays, the president, the VP, Nancy Pelosi. In the Wall Street Journal article, though, I wanted to share this with you. It was interesting. He shared that speech nowadays he feels is too restricted. Not everyone is buying it, though. Elon Musk saw that. He tweeted this saying, quote, "If he's serious about freedom of speech, then we have common ground. But destroying public safety by electing DAs who won't prosecute violent criminals needs to stop." So, Harris, it sounds like we can expect more of the same from Alex, but perhaps an even more intense political focus than his father.
Yeah, with social media backing it up because he's active, unlike his dad. Good to see you. Thank you. Will Kane, co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. And I think that that's a particular difference between these two men. And maybe it's a generational one. I'm not going to say you don't see George Soros anywhere, but you see Alex a lot of different places.
Yeah, I think you're putting a finger on something really important here, Harris. First of all, it's important for every American to understand, truly not just Americans, but anyone living in any society on earth, how influential Soros has been throughout his career. But here back at home in America, to truly understand the power of the Open Society Foundation, it's played a massive role, not just in electing the DAs referenced by Elon Musk that have affected public safety, but also behind the human rights campaign, which has been a major force in pushing trans ideology through corporations and the policies that are pushed forward in our society, not to mention illegal immigration, the funding of NGOs that help facilitate illegal immigrants making their way through the United States of America. Incredibly, incredibly influential, Harris. But I like the point about openness, about transparency, that you're pointing to social media. I'll be honest with you. I like the admission from Alex Soros that he is going to be more political than his father. I don't like the intent. I don't like the purpose, but I like the admission because any criticism of George Soros, who has been clearly political, has been thwarted away or swatted at with accusations of anti-Semitism. If you point out George Soros's political involvement, you're met with the idea that somehow that is anti-Semitic, to see and admit that truth. Alex is seeing and admitting that truth himself, saying, no, we're going to be very, very political, more so even on the issues that I just highlighted. And so then, therefore, maybe the American public have an honest discussion, have an honest view of exactly how powerful is this family.
Yeah, well, I think the White House has been getting an honest view since 2022. I mean, I'm counting, I mentioned at least 14 visits in the last year. But among the people on the list, John Finer, Deputy National Security Advisor, he met with him several times between 21 and 22. So you're right. It's a whole global international foreign policy by the U.S. perspective that we've got to watch for. Here's a list, by the way, of nearly 20 liberal district attorneys and prosecutors from across America. Fox has confirmed Soros made direct contributions or indirect contributions through PACs supporting these candidates. Look at that scroll. And here's a map by a nonprofit group, which shows up to 70 progressive DAs spread across the country linked to Soros in some way. Will.
I would just say, you know, if you question how I think many people would like to think, I'm not into politics. Politics doesn't affect me. Well, it doesn't affect you until you're the victim of a house burglary or whatever it may be, the rising crime in your city. The map right there that you showed shows you how politics can affect you. I know I saw my county. I saw mine scroll across. You know,
you did.
The scroll was a little slow, so it didn't reveal all of what we saw on that map. But Dallas County right there. So I know personally, and I'm sure many people watching, you know personally how you've been affected by the influence of this politics.
Yeah. Yeah, to get everything, we would have had to scroll so fast you couldn't read them.
Yeah.
Will Cain, I hope you'll watch this. Always great to have you on the program. Thank you.
Concerning.
George Soros has been this character when he came up, you know, that's conspiracy theory. You're just kind of throwing him in there. And he is kind of a mysterious person, you know, kind of, you know, shadowy, kind of in the background kind of figure. So I want to bring on somebody that has given this deep thought. One of the smartest minds on it. He's author of probably close to half a dozen books, content manager for the Bongino Report with Dan Bongino. He's author of a book called The Man Behind the Curtain: Inside the Secret Network of George Soros. We're going to pull back the curtain a little bit. We can do that today with Mr. Matt Palumbo.
Yay! Well, thank you so much for having me on, guys.
Welcome.
Matt, George Soros has been highly effective. It seems like everything he's touched, you know, whether it's affecting currencies globally, there's many nations he's not even allowed to as a person. Now, his son's going to double down and be more political, but is he as savvy and as effective as his father?
Well, I think he's going to be, you know, equally progressive, if not more progressive. We'll have to see how savvy he is. I mean, I don't want to judge someone just by their appearance, but he looks like the kind of kid who'd get stuffed into a locker growing up. He's a very terrible public speaker. There are usually more uhs and ums than actual words. And, you know, I have my share of those too, but it's, you know, a single digit percentage of my vocabulary. But, you know, well, the guy's got $20 billion right now at his disposal, and a lot of it's invested, so it'll turn into more than $20 billion. And, you know, I think I might be repeating myself, but at a minimum, his father's legacy will continue. And then it's just, well, what are Alex Soros's specific agenda items? And I guess, quote from the Fox report, the one positive is he is extremely open. He does not hide behind behind a curtain, I suppose. He's the man in front of the curtain. And that his whole social media accounts are just a who's who of various famous, influential people, and some who are very obscure that most people wouldn't even know who they were. But you just Google their names and you go, oh, she's some famous politician in some country I can't look at on a map. And it just goes to show just the extent of his connections, many of them of which I'm sure were from his father. But he also maintains that network, so he can very easily double down.
It's interesting because obviously you were kind of saying that earlier about George Soros, about, you know, kind of the conspiracy around him, and everybody's like, oh, George Soros, you know, all of that. But now to have the son come out, it seems pretty arrogant, which actually is kind of scary, you know, that they'd be like that he could be this much in the forefront and then that many trips to the White House. Obviously, everything that they're dealing with there. What's your thought
on that? It's like a monthly standing appointment with the president of the United States.
Well, I'm wondering, because, you know, the narrative has always been that if you point out that George Soros has done anything, he must be motivated by anti-Semitism. And, you know, I wonder if that narrative is going to survive. If he's going to openly do something, and then we'll report on it and they'll say it's anti-Semitic to notice what he posted on Facebook. So, you know, I guess we'll kind of see how that narrative goes. To be honest, I'm not even sure liberals really believe it when they say that. I think it's just, you know, sort of like the racist label in general, where the point is just to smear you so that people see that word and then don't listen to anything you say. Because, you know, you can make a very obvious counter argument with like the late Sheldon Adelson and say, okay, he donated many billions to Republicans. He was Jewish. And I can't think of a single time anyone on our side argued in bad faith and said, oh, you only care because he's Jewish. I mean, they care because he donates to right-wing causes. We cared about Soros because he gives to left-wing causes. It's pretty simple to figure out, but it's just more mudslinging at us, really.
Well, and it's kind of the it's a weakness of conservatives, I think, as a whole, to back down. And they typically do if somebody calls them a name, or you don't want to be offensive, or, you know, you want to kind of be the nice guys in it. But, it, you know, it shouldn't matter. If a Jewish rabbi robs a bank, that's a crime. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, you know, I don't think there's put an umbrella. Well, you can't point out the crime because of any other kind of a demographic.
It seemingly though, that's what they would like. It's, you know, the thing is, like, they want to claim that they're against racism and sexism, but really what they want is to just affect groups they don't like. Like, you know, they don't, obviously, if they were truly anti-racist, they wouldn't speak about white people or women who are Republicans or various religious groups the way they do. But it's just they're mad it's not happening to us. They only care about their own groups, really. I mean, I'm kind of making an obvious point there. But and then a thing, too, I'd point out is that conservatives, when they are accused of being racist / whatever, they make the mistake of playing defense. They bust out a list of every black friend they've ever had. They make excuses for why they're not racist. And it's a fool's errand because, again, they don't actually care if you are or not. They just want other people to think you are. And the real thing to do is just either ignore it, laugh in their face, or somehow turn it on them. But, you know, there is, you could save a 1,000 Jewish kids from a hospital that was on fire, and they'll still call you anti-Semitic if it serves their political purpose. There's quite literally nothing you can do to get rid of that label when they call you it. So it's what, I can't remember what the movie is where the guy's like, you know, it's a strange game because the only way to win is to not play at all. But that's pretty much that.
It's a great point. Even if you're an African American, but you're Republican, you know, they're going to call you a racist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're a white supremacist. So the word means nothing anymore.
Yeah, exactly. They've diluted all insults. So when there really is a white supremacist out there, it's kind of a, you know, Dennis Prager said this is probably the golden era for white supremacy, because if you are, you're lumped together with some really good people. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately. Yeah. Now with your book, The Man Behind the Curtain, encourage people to get it. The link's down below. It's selling incredible. The hardcover is actually on back order right now. So it's going, your sales are going amazing. Encourage people to get that. You saw the numbers there. It said 70 different counties have been affected by them. The return on investment is a lot higher to spend money on a lower level election if you want to dismantle America, if you think America fundamentally is bad and needs to be removed, to go with these DA positions, county level positions. It's easier to do that than it is to sway an entire nation to vote a certain way or to go for the presidency. So how has the open society and Soros' spending over the last 10, 20 plus years, how has it impacted our listeners today?
Yeah, well, it's right now the case that about 1 in 5 Americans lives under a Soros DA. And these DAs are people who sort of view criminals as the real victims in any situation. Whenever there is a crime, it is never the criminal's fault. It is somehow society's fault. It is, you know, they will speak as if only we spent another X amount of dollars on a welfare program, none of this would have ever happened. And it is reflected in their ideology. You know, whenever they take office, not only does the liberal DA take office, they also replace all the prior prosecutors. And the kind of prosecutors they bring in are the kind of people who enthusiastically voted for Barabbas. They are people who share that vision and who really just, you know, have that inverted view of society. Now, when it comes to funding the DAs, and I found when I was writing the book, there were 75 or so. His success rate was above 90%. And the reason he's been so successful there as opposed to presidential elections is the simple reason that no one really pays attention to these DA races. You are getting single digit to low double digit turnout. And it is just very easy to buy a couple of percentage points of the vote to turn an election versus a national election where it's, you know, it's just so much harder in that scheme to sway opinion, because there's so much, you know, evidence on the other, or there'll always be so much perspective on the other side. Well, in a DA race, you quite literally may only hear one point of view. And, you know, it is quite literally easy to buy elections in that regard. Now, in the past year or so, I did a piece in the New York Post about how I found 10 or so of these DAs who are either ousted or not running for re-election. But it's most of them are just not running for re-election, and it's because they know it'll be too humiliating to get all this money a second time around and then lose miserably. And you have ousted DAs like Chase Abudin in San Francisco, and you know, he had that title of being too crazy for San Francisco, which is, you know, honestly impressive to some extent. But it was so bad that after it happened, George Soros denied funding him in the first place. And, it, you know, the denial was, well, I didn't fund him. I funded some group who funded him. It was, you know, an argument only a fact checker would find convincing. But it is possible, I guess, for Soros to be embarrassed at how bad of a job he's doing, though it's not really the policies he cares about. It's the light being shined on it because he's funding this everywhere else. And I guess another notable one, too. Well, I've kind of observed with these DAs that whenever there's a local politician making national news, it's always for a bad reason. Like, it's almost never because they did something notable. That was
good. It's like when you hear an offensive lineman's name in a football game. Mm-hmm. if you know his name, it's probably a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you get people like Kim Fox, who, you know, I guess sadly, I don't think it was her policies from Soros that tombed her, but she was presided over the whole Jesse Smollett train wreck, and that got her ousted. Well, not ousted, but she didn't run for re-election. And just a lot of these just notable examples of you know, sort of malicious acts of incompetence. There are DAs who have offices where not a single prosecutor has tried a violent crime or murder before. And how can you possibly have a functioning DA's office when that's the case?
So let me ask you a question. Has it been mostly DAs that he's financed? And why DAs? You know, during the election, you know, obviously we found out how important the Secretary of State was. You know, a lot of people didn't know up to that point, you know, how significant that position
was.
Most
people were like, secretary, they get him coffee? What'd they do?
Exactly. And most people didn't realize how important that position was. How about DA? Why DA? And is that kind of where he's focused most of his effort?
He actually did have a project called the Secretary of State Project after the 2004 election because of what happened with the vote counting there. Or he wanted to prevent a repeat of Bush Gore, basically. But I might actually have the year wrong on that one. But so he did actually have a project there to try to get secretaries of state elected. But with the DAs, and it's DAs and then, you know, Commonwealth attorneys and those, sort of things. But the reason why is you don't need legislation with them to achieve what you want in terms of an agenda. So normally, you know, if I wanted a policy passed, I'd have to go to my state legislature. Okay, maybe the House passes it and the Senate debates it, it goes up to the governor, such and such. Well, when it comes to the DAs, they have total autonomy on law and order. So if you want someone who's anti-death penalty, you don't need to make it illegal in the state. You just get a DA who's anti-death penalty, and then, in effect, the death penalty no longer exists there. So really, if you want lower penalties for really any crime, you just back a DA who supports lower penalties, and there's no legislation required. And that's just generally what he looks for, is people who, well, they always phrase their arguments as, oh, we're just against, you know, sending nonviolent criminals to prison. And in my first thought, I'm like, I know, you know, like, they want us to think vandalism or stealing a Snickers bar or something like that. But I'm like, but Bernie Madoff was a nonviolent criminal, or a drunk drivers can be nonviolent criminals. Like, there's plenty of things you can think of. And then when you actually go into practice, they don't really go after violent criminals either. Like, there was a Buddha Bibaraj, who was the Loudoun County Commonwealth attorney, and she had all these things she wouldn't prosecute for. So I think it included breaking into a residence as long as you're sheltering yourself from the elements, theft if it's for basically for, you know, self-survival, and then drug use she didn't care about. So someone in Heritage pointed out, like, in theory, you could break into someone's house because it's cold out, ransack their fridge, and then smoke crack in their living room, and it would be legal. May remember the name Bibaraj. She was the one who, there was a father in Loudoun County whose daughter was sexually assaulted by a transgender student. Uh-huh. He spoke at a meeting, got tackled by the cops, got arrested and charged. She was the one who charged him. So you can smoke, you could have smoked crack in the building and you'd be fine. But if you speak out about a transgender hate crime, yeah, or not hate crime, crime against someone you know, that gets you arrested. And eventually the governor had to intervene to drop those charges. But that's the kind of mindset of these people.
And the proof is in the pudding, because everybody that's living under a Soros-funded DA, their life is worse off because of it.
And one of in five people are living under a Soros DA.
That's a large percentage of our country. If you live in San Francisco, they would laugh at you if you left your suitcase or something in a car. Cause like, well, you might as well have just given it away. It's become, you know, where people don't even look at them anymore. These videos of people running into, you know, well-dressed young people, you know, wearing Jordans and expensive clothes, going into a high-end clothing store and taking everything they can grab and then selling it three blocks down the street, you know, to people walking by. It's not a hard crime to solve. You see those things go unpunished. The life of the people that they say they're trying to protect in these communities, the Walgreens have gone under, Targets are closing in these communities. They're becoming food deserts because it's impractical to even own a business in some of these areas.
Yeah, well, they don't realize, but most grocers, for instance, is that most have like a margin of 1 or 2%, meaning if you steal $100, they might have to sell $10,000 to make it back. And they've just reframed the narrative there, where all these businesses are going out of business due to their policies. And then they'll act like, oh, well, it's capitalism's fault because they don't want to serve minorities, because apparently they've decided all of a sudden they don't want to make money. But the most surreal part of being in California, and I made the mistake of going to San Francisco 2 years ago, but also checked out, I have a story for that. And then I checked out like a Silicon Valley kind of area. And the surreal thing was, you'd be in an area where like a shack home is $2 million. It's really high end cars. All the shopping centers look really high end. And there are all these signs everywhere saying, don't leave everything in your car. Like stuff you'd expect to happen if you're in a really poor area. But it was just an inversion of reality. Like in most suburbs, you're paying a premium to not have to deal with that kind of stuff. And I don't know who's paying it to deal with it. But I guess one sort of off-topic part about the San Francisco trip. I'm in the hotel. And bottom floor, it's like half dozen people are walking into the elevator. Everyone has a mask on. My brother and I walk in without a mask, and every single person walked out in protest.
And when was this?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
2022.
No one confronted us, said anything. They all just looked at us and walked
out. Oh, wow. You know, it's an interesting thing. It's so sad because David and I, we lived in Northern California for quite a few years, and we used to go to San Francisco all the time.
For anniversaries.
So much fun. It was amazing. And things changed in a short period of time. And we're not talking, you know, and we're talking like
2013,
2014. Yeah. You know, it's so sad.
Yeah. Actually, one point I forgot to make was they always try to act like the minority groups that are the victims of these policies want things like fewer police in their community and that police discriminate. But if you look at the polling, this was during the George Floyd riots, African-Americans were the most likely to support more police in their communities. There's,
sure,
for some reason, this myth that their communities are over police, and that's why there's more criminals arrested in their communities. And they're actually getting it backwards. When there are more police, fewer people even try to attempt crime.
Sure.
So in their communities, yes, there are more arrests, but on a per capita basis, there are not. It's just that there's such a greater volume of crime because there's no police to report it, that when it does get caught, you're going to get more arrests from them. But, you know, paradoxically, if they had way more police, fewer people would be trying and you'd see less people arrested there. But no, there is very strong demand for more cops there. And in these cities, too, where they're ousting Soros DAs, it is predominantly like in San Francisco, it was, I believe, Asians and Hispanics were both more likely than the white residents, who are, you know, notoriously uber liberal there, to oust these DAs. So it's an inversion of the liberal narrative.
Mm-hmm. I want to be respectful of your time, and I know we're kind of close to the end. I want to bring up one last question. Again, we have Matt Palumbo, the author of The Man Behind the Curtain, George Soros, Inside the Secret Network. Encourage people to get this, you know, you be aware of kind of who's doing what, you know, kind of against us. But let's bring up one last thing. You know, you talk about crimes going unpunished. What connections are there between all of these indictments coming against President Trump and Soros funded? I know I saw Alvin Bragg on that list, others. Is there a connection between this? Because that's a victimless crime. It's ridiculous on its face. The 18 million valuation for Mar-a-Lago. Are there judges involved in the DAs? Like what we see going on right now with President Trump, what connection is there between that and George Soros?
Well, Soros has absolutely funded Alvin Bragg and Letitia James, and I guess it's kind of working as a 1-2 punch right now. And again, because he knows how that looks, he has tried to deny funding Alvin Bragg. And again, it was the sort of, oh, I just funded a PAC that funded Alvin Bragg kind of things. But, you know, and you said it was a victimless crime. And I actually alter that a little bit. I say it was a victimless non-crime. Because
yes. Right.
Not only was there no victim, I don't understand what the crime is supposed to be. Like, liberals are just pretending to not understand how you negotiate a loan. But you know, the one thing, too, that, you know, in addition to the Soros connections, that all these cases against Trump have in common is that they are all unprecedented. And every single one of them is brought by someone who has either campaigned on or publicly discussed taking down Trump. And we're seeing the Fannie Willis case collapse. The Judge Engoron ruling, I think, is so flimsy. How hard could it be to find one judge who says, yeah, you caused $0 in damages, so maybe you shouldn't have to pay hundreds of millions of dollars. And then, you know, the only positive I can think is that I saw a poll recently that showed that for the first time, a majority of voters now think the point of these suits just is to try to stop Trump from winning re-election. I mean, I would think it should be obvious to 100% of people. But as long as it makes Biden look bad, it could help him. And then obviously he can forgive all the federal crimes. I shouldn't say crimes, the federal charges. They're not
charges, the way to put it.
Yeah.
Great point.
Matt, I would love to sit down with you sometime and just figure out how you manage your time. It's unbelievable. You know, content manager for the Bongino Report. Like I said, written over, I don't know what the number is. It looks like half a dozen books when I research you.
And you're so young.
Yeah.
We're trying to figure that out.
How you spend your time is just unbelievable. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I know it's a monumental amount of work to just to do one book like this with the kind of research, the way you mm-hmm. back your sources, lay the facts out in it. It's just unbelievable. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Again, we'll put the link down below. People can go directly to get this book. The Man Behind the Curtain Inside the Soros Network. Unbelievable work. Thank you for what you're doing.
In a world where technology surrounds us, our exposure to EMR, or electromagnetic radiation, is higher than ever before. With over 400,000 cell towers and antennas in the United States alone, not to mention Wi-Fi that runs 24/7 in our home, cell phones that are carried in our pockets hours on end, and hundreds of 5G satellites in our orbit, common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, heart palpitations, insomnia, and so much more. Start protecting yourself now. Introducing Redemption Shield, your EMF protection products. With over 700 five-star reviews, Redemption Shield is leading the way in shielding and grounding products. Taking inflammation out of your body with grounding bed mats, grounding bed sheets, hats, scarves, Wi-Fi router covers, cell phone bags. Come and see us today at redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded. Redemptionshield.com. Use code FLYOVER and save 10%.
Of you that are my age or maybe even, you know, a little older in that range, you probably remember this commercial.
Where's the beef?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I guarantee if there's a cut in the supply chain due to weather, any other kind of political attack, we're in election year, your kids are going to be looking at you saying that exact same thing if all you've stored is rice, beans, and maybe some pudding. They're like, where's the beef? They want to substitute real beef for stuff made in a lab.
It's alive.
Even if you're, you know, kind of a prepared person, you've got a few things stored, it's hard to take care of the protein source in a way that's still enjoyable. These prices are so good and the beef isn't in such good quality, you could be storing this beef and use it on a regular basis. This could be part of your Taco Tuesday experience because you don't have to worry about storing it in a freeze location.
The girl has tacos.
So go to flyovermeat.com, use promo code FLYOVER for a huge discount. Again, flyovermeat.com, promo code FLYOVER. This is a crazy time to be alive.
Well, just in our lifetime, used to be where you'd hear your grandparents talk about how cheap gas was and stuff, and it was 75 years before, 50 years, you know, before.
And so we've seen a lot of changes since Biden took office. $700 more a month
than what you needed in January of 21 when he took office.
You might hear these kind of things and think, oh, that's overwhelming. I can't control the government. I can't control what they're doing. I can't control the spending. But we can take care of ourselves.
You want to make sure that you're buying bullion from somebody that you can trust and someone that does not charge you a commission when you go to sell.
If there's going to be a commission, have it on the front end, not the back end when it skyrockets. And now you're like, oh my gosh, look at this big, huge commission I got to pay because it's on the back end before I sell it.
You can buy an ounce of silver for $23. So this is something everybody can get into. And if silver goes to $50, if it goes to $75, if it goes to $100, all of those profits are yours. And that's happening while the dollar is buying less and less at the actual grocery store.
So you can go to flyovergold.com, fill out your information. When you do that, someone from Dr. Kirk's team will get a hold of you to set up a free consultation. It doesn't cost you any money whatsoever. Or to do the same thing, you can just call 720-605-3900. For more great content, go to flyoverconservatives.com.